Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Did you know that eggs are amongst the most nutritious foods on the planet, containing a little bit of almost every nutrient you need? Not only are they full of vitamins and minerals, but they're a good meatless source of inexpensive, high-quality, complete protein. Now, complete proteins contain essential amino acids that your body cannot produce itself and which must come from the diet. This makes eggs a great food choice for vegetarians who may otherwise struggle to get these essential amino acids with meat and fish cut from their diet. On your next supermarket list, add Clarence Court free-range eggs. With sunshine yellow yolks, I'm telling you, their rich flavour really can make the most ordinary recipes extraordinary. You can find Clarence Court eggs in all the major supermarkets, including Waitrose, Sainsbury's, Tesco, Ocado, and to learn more, please visit clarencecourt.co.uk. Hello, and thank you so much for tuning in to Food for Thought, a podcast on a mission to equip you with all the evidence-based advice you need to live and breathe a healthy lifestyle. I'm Rhiannon Lambert, registered nutritionist, best-selling author of Renourish, A Simple Way to Eat Well, and founder of Retrition, London's leading private nutrition clinic. In each episode, I'll be joined by special guests, all of whom can be considered authoritative voices in health, so that together we can learn fact from fiction and empower the healthiest and happiest versions of ourselves with trusted expert advice. For years, we've all been told it's important to eat breakfast to start the day right. But a more recent trend, intermittent fasting, throws that wisdom completely out of the window. This technique relies on restricting when you eat to set times, and with over 3,000 books available on Amazon dedicated to intermittent fasting, it's about time we set the record straight. Is there any truth in the supposed health benefits of this latest trend in the dieting world? Well, joining me today is one of the world's leading experts on intermittent fasting, doctor and registered dietitian Rona Antoni. Hello, Rona.
Hi.
Hello. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, no, it's an absolute pleasure. I think when we refer to intermittent fasting, we're not necessarily talking about just one diet, are we? There are several types of diets that fall under this category.
Exactly. And to complicate matters further as well, everyone's definition of fasting is very different as well. So for some, fasting means exactly that. Yeah. For others, there's another type of fasting called modified fasting.
Ah.
So that's where you severely calorie restrict. So you only have about 500 calories a day. To put that into context, that's about 2 chocolate bars.
Oh, gosh, not a lot.
Not a lot to kind of live on. And you kind of get the same metabolic adaptations as you do with fasting completely, but it's a way of just making it easier. So there are two kind of different approaches to fasting. And then there's the other aspect of it's actually an umbrella term, and you've got things like intermittent energy restriction and time restricted feeding as well. So with intermittent energy restriction, that's primarily been studied as a weight loss approach.
Yeah.
So you've got examples such as the 5-2 diet, where you fast or do a modified fast for 2 days of the week, or alternate day fasting, which means exactly that.
Right.
Whereas time restricted feeding, there's not necessarily a prescribed calorie restriction, and it's not necessarily solely intended for weight loss, but it's just restricting food intake to a narrower time interval, which thereby extends the length of the daily fast. So again, it's a different type of intermittent fasting.
It goes to show there's so much more to it than I think people
realise. Yeah.
And you've obviously spent a lot of your life researching this area.
Exactly, yeah.
Which is why you're the perfect guest to have on. I think despite the concept of fasting having been around thousands of years, the popularity of these diets seems to have soared over the past few years. In fact, I think it's estimated that the 5-2 has been undertaken by around 40% of dieters. What do you think about this?
I think it first really came into the public's attention back in 2012 with Michael Mosley when he recorded that Horizons programme on fasting, and I think it captured everyone's imagination. And at that point, I just started thinking about doing research, and then it really captured my imagination, and I just thought, I want to do research and a dietary intervention. I looked at the data out there and there was barely any human studies, so I just thought, here we go. This is my angle.
Yeah. Well, it's good to say that because I think a lot of influencers on social media, celebrities pick up on this. And I think their version of fasting perhaps isn't the same as the version you're researching.
Yes. So again, there are just so many different variations on it.
No, I know, because the majority of my clients that we have in the Retrition Clinic that have attempted intermittent fasting, they've done this because they see it purely as a weight loss measure. So what exactly does the research say?
So again, just kind of branching into the two different types. So with the 5-2 diet and alternate day fasting, which have been studied as weight loss approaches, they've generally shown, by calorie restricting for just a few days of the week, you could still lose weight.
Yep.
Probably no better than conventional dieting approaches where you calorie restrict every day. So in that case, it's not special in the sense that it is just purely down to the calorie restriction in that regard. With time-restricted feeding, it's never really been studied as a weight loss aid, but an unintentional consequence of it is people tend to cut down on calories accidentally and therefore lose weight without really thinking about it. So in that case, it's quite appealing.
Yeah, no, I think overall energy in, energy out seems to be...
exactly.
Seems to be the thing there because... It becomes a bit of a ritual, and I often find that you've got to be a certain type of person to embark upon this in the first place, because I think for so many it can become maybe a bit obsessive, or all they can think about is food when they're trying to actively restrict. But at the same time, there are other claims about intermittent fasting, which I think we have to discuss, and that it can help with treating serious diseases like cancer and cardiovascular disease. Is there any emerging body of research to support these claims?
So there's a growing body of evidence, particularly in humans. And so my main emphasis has always been on cardiovascular disease and type 2 diabetes. So with regards to that, there is some evidence, A, due to the fact that you're losing weight, but B, potentially due to the diet itself. It may lead to greater improvements in certain risk factors, such as insulin sensitivity, which could have long-term implications, for example, for your diabetes risk, but it's not always seen in all studies, so there's always the take that with a pinch of salt, really.
Well, that's the thing, because are these studies in currently healthy individuals?
It's a combination. So now we've done studies both in healthy individuals, in people with pre-diabetes, and right forward to people with diabetes, and generally speaking, it has shown benefits. And in my own research, I've taken a slightly different slant to looking at it. So the majority of weight loss studies to date have got people to follow a diet for 6 months, compared to the effects to conventional dieting approaches on risk factors for cardiovascular disease and diabetes. Whereas I, instead of getting them to follow a diet for a set period of time, I got them to lose a set amount of weight instead. So that, therefore, you're controlling the element of weight loss. So that helps us to determine, are there any metabolic benefits to these type of diets over and beyond their effects on weight loss? And it seems to be, at least tentatively, based on a couple of studies, including my own and Barth, who have recently replicated, that it seems to promote greater efficiency at clearing fat after a meal, which is an important cardiovascular disease risk factor. And it's not solely explained by weight loss. So that's something that I think requires further attention, because this is seen in people who are relatively healthy, who don't necessarily have an established impairment in doing so to start off with.
So basically, for people that are... fasting or for time-restricted eating, let's say.
Yeah.
It's just helping them digest their fat in their food better.
So that's to do more with the 5-2 diet. So it's just a case of if you're continuously fasting, you're therefore more adept at using fat.
Yeah.
So that manifests in the fact that you then clear fat faster when you do eat.
And it's so good, but I think it's also so important to add that you've got to be able to probably maintain this way of eating as a lifestyle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And studies up until now have generally not lasted beyond about a year or so. So I think the next step in, particularly with the 5-2 and alternate day fasting, is to look at it from a weight maintenance aspect. So what happens once people come off this diet, and can it also be used as a weight maintenance approach? Time-restricted feeding is quite interesting as well, in that, as I mentioned, it doesn't always result in weight loss, but there's certain evidence that types of time-restricted feeding, such as early time-restricted feeding, so not eating later than 3 o'clock, may have benefits in reducing diabetes risk factors, even in the absence of any weight loss. So that's quite an appealing thing that I think we need to take forward and learn more about.
Interesting. No, it's fascinating, because I wonder if you would think about implementing this to people daily, or is it once a week, or how does that work?
So that's an important question, and the majority of the research has done it on a continuous basis. However, having run these studies myself, what I do understand is everyone has a social life. No one wants to, you know, stop eating at 3 o'clock. So I think there needs to be an element of flexibility, and I think the next step in time-restricted feeding is to look to see what happens if you only do it every other day or for 5 days of the week, because realistically a lot of my participants said, this is great, I can do it, but probably not every day. So
no, and I think it depends what your job is and your lifestyle.
Yeah.
There are so many people that are running around like crazy things every single day.
Exactly.
So what actually happens to our bodies when we adopt a state of fasting? Because there are claims that it's giving the body a break, you know, but also some people say, does it go into starvation?
Yeah, so once you're entering a state of fasting, what your body's trying to do is to preserve glucose for organs such as the brain, for instance.
Yes.
So what it does is it therefore takes fat out of your fat stores and uses that as an energy source instead. And as well, by doing that, you limit the amount of glucose you use, and therefore you limit the amount of muscle or amino acids that you have to use to then produce more glucose for organs such as your brain, for instance. And there is that element of, but does the body go into starvation mode? And I don't think we truly fast for long enough to really enter that kind of state of starvation for it to kind of have any kind of deleterious effects on your body.
What version, or how long would you say it takes to fast to get into that stage?
Probably over 24 hours, 36 hours, and independent on the effects on starvation as well. It's studies, particularly in mice, that showed that the potential for harm for following this type of diet occurs when you're fasting for 24 to 36 hours or more. So it's kind of a case of, you don't have to go to extreme lengths, because I'm often asked, so how long should I fast for? And people want to take it to extremes, but really you don't necessarily have to.
I think as human beings, we are very extreme, 100%. It's very all or nothing, the mindset. That's the psychology side of things. So what would be the side effects that people should be aware of when they implement something like this? Because I'm very aware, we have lots of listeners that may be like, oh, I'm just going to try and do a 24-hour fast, but we wouldn't really recommend that.
No. So the major kind of side effects, so obviously you've not got as much glucose, so you start feeling hungry or hangry, as people like to call it as well.
Honestly, Rona, I get so hangry.
And, you know, it might cause headaches or decreased attention, for example, dehydration if you're not drinking enough. But at the same time, other people report the complete opposite. So some people just feel as if their mental clarity is improved by fasting. So it is very, very individual. So for me, I can't fast more than about 4 hours until I need food. But for some people, they can just kind of go on and on. So it's very, very individual. But those are the main kind of side effects.
I really appreciate you saying that it's very individual, because one very worrying thing, as you mentioned just a moment ago, that some data in rats suggests one thing, and you can't apply that possibly to everyone.
Exactly. So a study in rodents means absolutely nothing, because beyond the fact that we don't have a tail, there are so many other different aspects.
And what about if you're pregnant, or, you know, you've got an illness that you can't do it?
We wouldn't recommend it in, for instance, in pregnancy.
No.
Or very kind of established illnesses. Diabetes, potentially, it does have therapeutic benefits, yeah. but you would need to be monitored quite closely by your clinicians as well, yeah. due to the risk of things like low blood sugars.
Yeah, this is exactly why we have you on, because we know that, as we've just spoken about, 20% of the energy we consume every day is used by our brains in the form of glucose. And what impact would it have on our brain function? Would you experience brain fog, loss of memory?
Not necessarily loss of memory, but just decreased concentration potentially. But at the same time, like I said, some people report improved mental clarity. So it's very much dependent on the individual. And I've kind of done some research looking at mood, for instance. And ultimately, we don't find any changes. But that's because for some people, mood significantly improves. For some, it's significantly worsened. So then it kind of just evens out to nothing in the end. So again, it's just highly individual. And it's a case of working with the individual to see what type of fasting works for them.
100%. I actually saw, and it was pretty big on social media, intermittent fasting, around a year or two ago. It was blowing up, but in particular, people that are not qualified in the area, giving out advice. A few personal trainers I saw doing it, lots of various people. But for you as a researcher, that must be quite frustrating, because you're seeing messages that conflict with what you're trying to achieve.
Yes, exactly. And I recognise a lot of the apparent evidence about intermittent fasting is just based on rat studies, for example, or just one very obscure study. And it's just, there are so many things we don't know about intermittent fasting. Yeah. So me, even as a clinician, I would be reluctant at this moment to necessarily prescribe something like the 5-2 or alternate day fasting for a long period of time until I understand the data better and know the long-term consequences. Yeah. Whereas others just kind of think, yeah, just give it a go, and then don't give them any guidance.
No, I know. I mean, I think there's even to somebody preaching just have 1 or 2 meals a day or something. You've got to be so careful, I think, with these things overall. Because I would also argue that intermittent fasting, if abused, could lead to disordered eating and poor relationships with food. We find a lot that if people fail or break a rule, it leads to feelings of shame or guilt. And do you have any advice or warnings around that area?
I think as clinicians, we just need to exercise our own judgment and experience. So if someone you know has a unhealthy relationship with food or has had eating disorders in the past, to perhaps steer clear of suggesting this approach. And if you find that they are becoming continuously frustrated or feel as if they're breaking rules, one of two things: either just suggest perhaps this diet isn't really working for you, or perhaps if they are getting continuously frustrated, it's because they need to try a different type of approach, so they need to modify it, so that way you remove the element of guilt, because the type of diet you're trying with them doesn't fit with their lifestyle.
So obviously it is a worrying thing for people that are triggered and with disordered eating, but when would it be a good thing to advise intermittent fasting?
I think the majority of the patients I advise this type of diet for are the types that have kind of really struggled on the kind of more conventional dieting approaches, who need a more structured approach, who, for instance, just like the idea that on 2 days of the week, for instance, so one approach of the 5-2 diet is using meal replacement products, for instance, and they find the idea of 2 days of the week not really having to worry about what they're eating, they would find that more beneficial than just trying to consciously calorie restrict every single day. Potentially, as the research kind of moves forward, it could also have applications, greater applications for people at risk of type 2 diabetes, people who have got certain lipid disorders such as raised triglycerides. I think it does have a lot of potential, but the research is definitely still very much in its infancy.
It's definitely a bit of a baby waiting to grow there, I think. I definitely hear a lot of clients saying they struggle with just the world of diets in general and calorie counting. So if you are that type of individual that can go to work, you forget to eat, and you're just going to have your meal replacements, then that's going to suit you, I think. Goes to show we're so unique. And also, we've got to be, obviously, as nutritionists and as a dietitian sat here in this studio, we've got to be aware of nutritional deficiencies that could appear. Exactly. And of course, this is when seeing a health professional really does matter, doesn't it?
Exactly, because you can fast in so many different ways. There's fasting, but if you're having 500 calories, where are you sourcing those 500 calories
from? Is it the 2 chocolate bars?
Exactly, yeah, hopefully not. And even on when you're not fasting as well, what are you actually eating? So you need to make sure that you do maximise nutrition when you do eat. And I place a careful emphasis on making sure that my patients and also participants have a healthy diet outside of this. And then they don't necessarily as well have to then think about calories either, because if they're eating healthily, then naturally they won't overeat, for instance, as well.
That's a very interesting point that I actually see a lot as well, is that when people eat well and they respect their body really does love them back. It's one of those cliche things. But to what extent does the time of the day impact the nutritional status? So I hear a lot of talk on, is lunchtime better for optimum nutrition or dinner?
Yeah, so there are many kind of different aspects of that. So focusing first of all, metabolism and heart health and diabetes risk, the optimal time to eat would definitely be more in the morning compared to the evening. So they've done lots of studies. So for instance, if you give someone a fry up in the morning and the same fry up in the evening, the efficiency in which your body kind of metabolizes and clears the nutrients in that meal is best in the morning compared to the evening. Dieters who tend to eat their calories earlier on in the day also tend to lose weight a lot more, and that's for various reasons. And also appetite. If you feed someone the same meal in the morning compared to the evening, appetite responses are very different, so people are more prone to overeating in the evening. So the evidence suggests eat kind of breakfast like a king, lunch.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Everyone's heard of that one.
I know. But eating breakfast like a king is quite difficult to do for so many because of obviously their lifestyle, and you end up getting really bland options. Whereas I think most people maximize, and this is where we have it wrong, actually, especially in the UK, is that we really have our biggest meal in the evening at dinner.
Yeah, exactly.
I think most of my clients don't eat enough protein throughout the day, and then suddenly they have their huge whack in the evening.
Yeah, exactly.
So timing is a very interesting thing.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
So if we're looking at things like likelihood of overeating at other meals, did you find that with any of your research, people then went on to overeat at particular meals if they were time restricted?
Not so. What I found is they tended to accidentally cut calories without kind of really intending to. And there was a recent study that came out about a couple of days ago that showed that appetite just kind of evens out over the course of the day. So this was time restricted feeding, eating no later than 3 p.m. And you would think that people would be absolutely ravenous by 8 o'clock, but in fact appetite was a lot more evened out compared to when they were eating 3 meals a day with their last meal at 8 o'clock.
I think so much of this is really fascinating. I can't wait to see your research emerge and grow, because ultimately, as you've said, we are unique, but there's different areas, and I call it the kind of spider web of nutrition. We're in the middle of the web. You've got the social situations, the family routine, societal norms, what's expected of you. And actually, perhaps we've lost sight of what does work for our body.
Yeah, exactly. exactly. And it's just very difficult to follow an approach like this where 24/7 you're subjected to food cues and just having food around you, and also lifestyles are just not conducive to fasting.
No.
So it takes a lot of effort, a mental effort, to kind of follow an approach like this, which is why, yeah, as well as researchers, it's important to look to see how we can improve the flexibility.
Yeah.
And it's important to try approaches that are more feasible. So for instance, I will never ask someone to fast for an entire day because that's not feasible.
No.
Or potentially not ask everyone to only eat until 3 o'clock, because realistically it's the cultural norm to eat late in the evening. So it's just kind of modifying your advice, so to say, okay, just don't eat after 7 or 8. So yeah, it's just kind of modifying it, really.
I mean, I should add, of course, there are situations, religious situations, where, like,
yeah,
Ramadan, where fasting,
yeah,
is a cultural norm.
Yes,
isn't
exactly
it?
Yeah,
have,
yeah,
you done any research on Ramadan or areas?
I haven't done any research, but I have read some of the research around it, and it very much depends, because there are so many different cultures who follow these principles. So it's very much dependent on the country under study. So in some countries you get kind of transient improvements in risk factors for diabetes and cardiovascular disease. In others you don't, because it's very much dependent on what they do eat in the end.
Yeah.
But it is always transient, because after the month is up,
yeah,
they resume their normal eating patterns.
Of course. No, it's very interesting. A lot of people have reported as well getting headaches when they fast. Is,
yeah,
that something to be expected?
Particularly with Ramadan, because they're not drinking as well. So certainly. And also not getting enough carbohydrate or glucose can also lead to headaches as well. So
yeah,
I certainly anecdotally find that as well if I don't eat for a period of time.
No, 100%. I think there's also an argument today as well that the fact that fasting isn't for everyone, but there's a certain feeding window that now seems to be spoken about in the media. Do you see this as something we should be recommending on a mass scale?
I think on a mass scale, it's just kind of coming up with realistic targets. So perhaps just not eating too late, so after 7 or 8 o'clock. So I think on a mass scale, certainly that for people who are at higher risk of, for instance, diabetes, perhaps just trying to tailor that and looking at potentially trying a more targeted approach, such as the,
yeah,
early time restricted feeding, should their lifestyle permit that.
Yeah, and do you think everybody should or will be one day intermittent fasting?
Realistically, not. Because, yeah, our lifestyle is just not conducive to doing so. But
no.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that leads me on to questions that we've had from followers today. So the first one is from Timmy. And Timmy has said, is it always better to eat smaller meals in the evening? We've kind of touched on that, but is it always better?
Again, very, very individual in that sense. But in terms of calories, yes, having your smallest meal in the evening would probably be more beneficial in terms of your health. So eating more in the morning and then less in the evening, yeah.
So the next question Michelle has asked is that my PT told me I shouldn't be eating carbs after lunchtime. Is this true?
I don't think there is an element of truth behind that. And when it comes to carbohydrates, you can't group all carbohydrates together. And the evidence shows that whole grain carbohydrate, bearing in mind the quantity and that you're not overdoing it, is part of a healthy, balanced diet. So,
oh, Rona, I could not have put that more beautifully myself. The two Qs, the quality and the quantity.
Exactly, yeah.
Exactly.
Context matters.
Precisely. Please don't shame the carbs, guys. We actually have another podcast episode specifically on carbohydrates, so that you can definitely go and check that one out. Ryan has said, is one type of intermittent fasting diet better for weight loss than others?
The studies suggest they're just as kind of good. So it's the extent of weight loss is dependent on the length of the study as opposed to the actual type of diet itself. No study is actually directly compared, for instance, the 5-2 diet and alternate day fasting. But when you piece all of the studies together, weight loss is comparable. So it's a case of finding which approach really works best for you.
No, it's so true. We have an episode on weight loss as well,
yeah,
specifically. And essentially all of these diets, there's a reason why we say diets don't work, but
yeah,
all of it comes down to your overall energy and your lifestyle,
yeah,
and what works for you. So that was very, very well put. Now, what a gorgeous name. Toya. Toya has said, if I don't eat a snack at 4 p.m, I get really bad stomach pains. Is this normal?
I think without knowing more about her,
no,
it's not
Toya,
kind of, yeah.
I've got to say, Toya, this could be so many
things.
Perhaps you need to check with your GP, because we don't know what you're even eating.
Yeah, so I can't really speculate without kind of having more information, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think sometimes when some people leave gaps between eating for too long and it doesn't suit them, because obviously everyone's very different, but it's very difficult to say. Now, Omar has said that, I read that sticking to intermittent fasting for a few years makes your body really efficient at metabolizing food for the rest of your life, and therefore you can generally stay slim.
Unfortunately, I cannot say that with any certainty. No study lasted more than a year. And if you're a rodent, you'll live longer. But unfortunately, us humans, we don't quite know yet. We're not quite there yet with the research.
No, I was going to say, if only we had 100 years of data
on
something.
Yeah, that'd be amazing.
But we're not going, oh gosh, we're not going to be here, are we, when we see data?
And on that note.
So, Rona, that leads me on to my favourite part of the podcast, our fact or fiction round. Are you ready?
Yep, I'm ready.
Okay, so we need you to answer fact or fiction to the following questions.
Okay.
Intermittent fasting makes you lose muscle.
True, but with the caveat of not more so than other conventional dieting approaches.
Excellent.
Sorry, I can't stick to
chewing. No. We had this debate last time that, and this is for an academic, it's their worst nightmare, quick fire round. We shouldn't eat after 8 p.m.
False, in the sense that occasionally it's absolutely fine to do so if you're out for a social meal or if your lifestyle doesn't permit it. But generally speaking, if, say, 5 days of the week you could eat before 8 o'clock or not too late, then that's probably going to be better for you.
Yeah, I guess it depends what time you go to bed, I suppose, as well. Fasting slows down your metabolism.
True to a certain extent.
Okay, do you want to delve into that a little bit?
So it can cause a slight slowdown in your metabolic rate, but that's then counteracted by the fact that you don't really tend to then overeat when you do eat after that.
Excellently put. Fasting increases your stress hormone cortisol.
Yes.
Oh.
It is, yeah.
Intriguing. Breakfast is the most important meal of the day.
True.
Oh, I love that you said that's true. Starving makes us absorb more calories in our next meal.
False. Yeah.
There we go. False. Fasting makes you overeat.
It can be true or false. Sorry, this is the worst nightmare for research.
We had David Grimes in series 2 say the word faction. He merged the two together, fact and fiction.
Oh, why did you not tell me about this?
Sorry, I don't like to give it away. Skipping breakfast will make you lose weight.
False.
Eating carbs before bed helps us sleep better.
Dependent on the individual.
There you go. Fasting can give you more energy than eating.
Dependent on the individual. I can't do fact and fiction.
No, that's great. Well, thank you so much. You did a very, very good job at our fact or fiction round.
Thank you.
And that nearly wraps up this episode. But as with every guest, we finish with a food for thought. So mine today would be that, as with all nutrition advice, one of the most important things to remember is that we're unique, and that this could not be more relevant today with the discussion that Rona and I have been having. Because while some may find intermittent fasting is beneficial and seemingly thrive on such a diet, others may not fare so well. We're all so completely individual that, as with any diet, nothing can be expected to work for everyone. We've discussed today some of the potential advantages of intermittent fasting, but we've also covered the side effects that, you know, it could impact your mood, your energy levels, perhaps most importantly, the potential for disordered eating, which is something that we see a lot in the nutrition clinic. In fact, we try and discuss this topic frequently on the nutrition social media platforms, because we have to realise that psychology and nutrition are very interlinked. A diet that's based on rules and restrictions can have a longer term, you know, negative consequence on someone. So please be mindful of this if you're considering an intermittent fasting diet. And always please consult with a registered nutritionist or dietitian if you need any support. Somebody like the amazing Rona that we have in front of us, who clearly knows what she's talking about. So Rona, if I could ask you to leave our listeners with one food for thought, anything you think would be a good take home message.
Don't believe what you read in the media and in books. Consult an appropriate healthcare professional.
What a to-the-point food for thought. Thank you so much, Rona, for coming on the podcast today.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much for listening to Food for Thought. It really is amazing to know there's such a craving to hear from expert voices in a world full of confusing advice. If you enjoyed this episode, you will absolutely love what's coming next week, so please make sure you click subscribe to be the first to hear it. And please, if you have time, do leave a 5-star review. It really does help to get our podcast out there to reach higher highs in the charts and hopefully help more and more people. For more information about my Retrition Clinic, books, healthy recipes, events, retreats, and so much more, please visit Retrition.com and follow me at Retrition on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.